So, Lori, just tell us who you are and what you do. I mean, let's just kind of get started and getting to know just the basics of who is Lori Gallegos.
Oh my goodness. Wow. Well, right now I am currently in a new position. And so I started about 2 months ago as the assistant superintendent for elementary instruction for Northside ISD here in San Antonio. But prior to that, I worked for 4 years as the director of leadership development. And so in my position before, I was able to work with our principals, our academic deans, our associate principals at elementary and middle and high school, just to do all kinds of leadership training and help them to be the best they could be for their teachers.
Awesome. One of my favorite kind of intro questions I love is getting to know a little bit about what your experience was like as a student, like when you were in school, whether it was elementary, middle, or high school, kind of what was your framework about education and school? What was your family dynamic like? Can you kind of shed a little light on what Lori was like as a student?
Okay, I sure can. What was Lori like? She was definitely the teacher pleaser. I grew up in a family of educators, and so my mom actually is a retired superintendent herself, and so was a teacher, campus administrator, the whole time we were growing up. And my father was actually on the school board at the district that I was in. And so it was one of those where, yes, we were definitely going to be teacher pleasers, right? Because otherwise mom and dad got that call and you would be in trouble. But yeah, I mean, I am a little bit older. And so I grew up, my education was in the 70s and 80s. And so a lot of the campus experiences and things that we had started out a little bit more like open concept classrooms back when I was little with, the big wide open spaces that eventually changed over time. But I think growing up, I remember in elementary school, it was exciting to have opportunities to have competitions with other kids in the classroom or, station activities, things like that. What now I know that they are pedagogy wise. Back then, of course, it was just fun. So yeah, all the way up into high school. And in high school, it was, AP classes and then a whole lot of fun through band and color guard and fine arts and all of those good things. So yeah, just kind of a, I think a very perfect nuclear kind of experience growing up through school. I think my senior year in high school, I made the decision because up to that point, I was insisting I was going to be a doctor. I was going to be a pediatrician and work with kids. I always knew I wanted to work with kids. But when I realized when I was in an anatomy class my senior year of high school, I realized I did not like blood and that was not going to happen. As a pediatrician, you were kind of stuck with that. And so I remember the day I was in the living room talking to my mom and dad, and I said, "Nope, I'm shifting and I'm going to be a kindergarten teacher." And so from then on, I went with it, and that's exactly what I did. So I think it's one of those things you kind of, I knew I was going to be a something to do with kids, but then the avenue shifted just a little bit.
That's interesting, Lori. So, in thinking about that through your journey, was there a teacher or a mentor as you started that just really had a significant impact when you think of the why you got into it?
I think so. I mean, I think there were a lot of teachers growing up in the public school system that I can remember. I mean, I still remember Miss Kelly, my kindergarten teacher, and
Was
Miss
that
Simone.
Gianna Kelly?
No, I don't
Oh,
think so.
okay.
I don't think so. Wouldn't that
Okay.
be funny, right? If it was someone we both had already known.
Exactly.
But yeah, I think I can remember Miss Cook, my third grade teacher, who just really inspired a love of reading through a kind of a book reading competition, almost like, how many books can you read? How many minutes can you read? And so I think from an elementary standpoint, those two teachers really, to this day, I can remember them and remember the classroom. But I think as far as really influencing me overall and what I do as a career path, it was a college professor, Dr. Juanita Svensson at Texas Lutheran University. She was our early childhood professor, and she just opened our eyes, or my eyes specifically, about what early childhood could look like, and just all of the facets of not only being developmentally appropriate, which was kind of a new concept back in those days, but also having high levels of rigor for young children, but doing so through a play-based environment. And so I really attribute everything that I did as a teacher in early childhood to her, and have just, wanted to honor all the learning that she gave us. Well, I think as a teacher, gosh, I was in the classroom Oh, that was a long time ago. I think altogether I was in the classroom for about 7 or 8 years. And during that time,
Alexa,
I had gone back to school to get my master's degree. And so I went to UTSA and got my master's degree in curriculum instruction, focusing on early childhood, because I was convinced I was going to be an early childhood supervisor at the district level. But what I didn't know at that time was there was one position in the entire district for that, and this was in a really large district. And so I learned quickly that probably was not the safest route for job security. So I had gone back to school and I went to Trinity University to get my degree in educational leadership. So when I graduated that year, gosh, it was the year 2000. So I started out as a vice principal at the time here in Northside, and I worked as a vice principal for 3 years and then became a principal at a Title I school. I was at Villarreal Elementary, and so a bilingual Title I campus, which was an incredible experience. The campus was very different from the schools I had taught at or worked at as a vice principal at that time. So a lot of learning. We were able to develop a dual language program while we were there, and wow, it was just a great, great, great experience. So I was there for 6 years, and then I had the opportunity to go open a campus, a brand new campus, for Koontz Elementary in Helotes, also part of Northside, of course, and I was there for 12 years. So worked as a leader for a long time. At this point, I've been a school leader longer than I was an actual teacher, but all very diverse experiences that kind of helped, I think, groom me to become the leadership development director and really know what are the skill sets that our leaders need to have in order to be able to help lead their teachers.
You said something earlier about how much you learned kind of when you went from your vice principal position to this different campus as a principal. Thinking back to those first, maybe that first 1, 2, 3 years with your own campus, like what do you feel like you were really learning at that stage? Like what was it for you that was transformational as you became a principal?
Sure. I think at that early point in my principalship, I was learning a lot about how kids are kids, no matter what kind of campus you're at, what kind of backgrounds children are coming from. But the way that you lead is a little bit of a different lens depending on what the needs of the campus might be. And so at that time when I was at the campus, it was a Title I school. And so I had a lot to learn about kind of what we refer to now as wraparound services. What are the different programs that we can do to offer our families help, not only in their educational or their academic bringing, but also around them, what sort of community supports that they might need in order to help them just to have their basic needs to be met. I learned a lot about how you lead a campus that has a lot of diversity in it in terms of programs. So whether, you know, you're at a campus that has a high population of special education students, for example, or GT students or whatever it may be, when I landed at Villarreal, I had never been at a campus that had that high of a population of bilingual students. And so there was a definite learning curve for me to learn about the kind of requirements that are in place with bilingual education and what's the best programming for that. So there was a lot of study, both personal study and then study with our team on the campus, and that ultimately led us to dual language. But it was such a great experience because it wasn't just me, it was our whole team. And so we really were able to learn together, which is, of course, one of my core beliefs and just that's good adult learning theory, right, is that you work through different challenges and learning curves together with others to be able to help them grow. So I think those early years as a principal, I think that's where a lot of my learning came from. And then, of course, just learning the job, how to be a principal. You know, when you're what we call junior administrator, if you're an associate principal or a vice principal, you think you know and you're ready. And then, Jerry, you can probably attest to it, right? You land the first day on the job and you're like, oh, I don't know what I'm doing.
It's like being, I attribute it to being like a parent. You have a baby and you think you read all the books, you learn all the theory, and then that you have that baby and you're like, oh my gosh, I don't know what to do. And then you lean on like your mom, and when you get the principal job, then you figure out a way to lean on a mentor, right? Someone that you have that trust and relationship with to help guide you That I always think of it like children.
For sure. Yeah, I love that analogy. That is so true. I remember, you know, even after having kids, you drive away from the hospital and you're like, oh my gosh, there's no chapter in the book for what you're supposed to do now. So that is very true.
And with childbirth, you know, I didn't think my mom really knew a whole lot, because you know how you go through those phases. Well, when you're an assistant principal, you don't say it out loud, but sometimes in your head, you're saying, oh, if I were principal, I would be doing it this way, or I would be doing it that way. And then once you step into the mother parent role, you're like going back to your roots of your parent or the people who know the most. And when you step into the principal role, I feel like it's the same way. You're like, oh my gosh, I just thought I could do this an even better way or something. And then you feel a little lost.
All the theory, all the book learning, it's not out the window. It's that foundation you absolutely need.
Correct.
But at the same time, you learn to rely on others who have been through similar experiences. Not to say you're going to do it exactly the way they did or make the same decision that they did, because their experience is going to be different at a different campus. But just to learn, where do I start and what are the questions, right? What do I need to be asking to help me mm-hmm. think about this situation or this problem or this task? Kind of holistically and not just from my lens of what I think is the right thing. So,
and then building that trust as you're going through to be able to start giving meaningful feedback, right? I mean, you step into that role, and when you go into a campus that you don't have relationships with all the people, right? And it makes me think of when you stepped into your leadership role and you were helping in that prior to your current role. You probably also, with the principals that you were training, I mean, tell us about that. How did you step into that role to build that relationship with principals and leaders so that when you started talking through the evaluation process, you know, they would receive that information? What did that look like, Lori?
Good point. Very good point. So at the district level, the fact that I had been an elementary principal in this district for such a long time that I had some street credit, which helped with the elementary peaks, right? My peers that I had been with, because I had served as a mentor. I had worked with a lot of them, you know, just through natural turnover, especially during that time, because we were such a fast growth district. We did have a lot of turnover, a lot of new campuses and young principals. So I was already kind of developing others just through that mentor role. So I think the trust there was a little easier. Where I felt that learning curve a little bit in the relationship building part was with my middle school and high school principals, because even though I had worked with those that had been in my cluster when I was serving as a principal, we're a very large district. And so it was learning not only just the people themselves, but also really learning what's it like to be a middle school principal or a high school principal, having never done that job before. Because I do think, especially at the secondary level, they want to have folks working with them and helping them to learn and grow who mm-hmm. have an understanding of what it's like to walk in their shoes. So right. I did spend a lot of time, my boss at the time was wonderful about pushing me out of the nest and be like, nope, you're not going to go to the elementary meetings now. Welcome to middle school. Welcome to high school. And you know, so there was some vulnerability there for sure. I remember the first time I was presenting in front of the high school principals and I did something very elementary, like, I don't know, you know, clapped my hands to get their attention or something. And they just looked at me and laughed. And I was like, oh my gosh, I'm so embarrassed. But, you know, and I told them, I was like, I'm sorry, guys, I'm a kindergarten teacher at heart. And they just laughed. And they're like, you're doing great. You've got this. And ever after that point, I felt more comfortable and, you know, wanted to spend time on their campuses, wanted to do learning walks with them, not necessarily to impart my wisdom, because I didn't have any from middle school and high school, but really to learn together with them, to understand their dynamics and their leadership needs, and then to be able to bring in my lens of evaluation and leadership and feedback and all of those things to help apply it to what their specific needs were on their campuses.
Wow. That had to be interesting walking into the secondary role. And then when you're talking about the evaluation system and giving teacher feedback, and you know, you've heard people say, well, I've never taught, you know, an AP course at the high school or whatever. Like, how can you evaluate people if you haven't taught that? So what did that look like when you talked about T-tests and just giving that feedback in areas? And vice versa, because there could be secondary principals who maybe have also shifted into the elementary role or, doesn't happen a lot, I'm sure, but that does happen at times.
It absolutely does. And I think the middle school principals are the ones where you see that fluctuation back and forth a little bit more because they're the in-between, right? Mm-hmm. So they might go back and forth from an elementary principalship to a middle school or from middle school to high school. And so there's a learning curve there for them for sure. And we hear that no matter what level you're at. You know, you tend to think it's more secondary. Like to your point, Jerry, it's, gosh, how am I going to go in and observe this AP calculus class when I was the kid who struggled in math, going through. But it's even true at elementary. So we have principals sometimes that maybe they taught fourth and fifth grade their whole career, and now they're having to go in and do evaluations and give feedback to our pre-K teachers. And they're like, I don't even know what I'm walking into, right? So I think with part of it, again, it's like I had said before with getting to know secondary, it's not so much about what you're teaching, but it's helping them just to define what good instruction looks like. So for example, with T-tests, when we're training new administrators to become certified T-test appraisers, we talk a lot about how you're having to kind of let go a little bit of what you used to do in the classroom, because you may think that the way you did it is the best way, and maybe it is, maybe it isn't. But you can't look at another teacher and say, oh, you know what? Your way is not good. It's not proficient because it doesn't look like the way I would do it. So you kind of have to let that go, and you have to start looking at the rubric itself to be able mm-hmm. to help them understand what are the specific look fors I have. So if I am in that AP chemistry or calculus or whatever it may be, even if I've never taught it, good teaching is good teaching. Does it help to have a background? Absolutely. But if not, we teach them how to use resources. If they need to understand a little more, like, gosh, I don't know if that teacher was really teaching to the level of rigor with that TEK, then we teach them who are the resources on campus that can help you with that part. But that is an aside to what you're actually seeing in the classroom and the evidence that you're collecting about what good teaching is. So we just try to help them kind of think about it a little bit differently and look all the way through at different aspects or different perspectives.
That's interesting. So when you think about T-tests, I mean, what were some of the tools that you would have them, you talked about campus resources. I mean, were there other instruments that you used to help guide them within that process?
Sure. I mean, some of it is the state dictates it, right? The state's going to give you your rubric and they give you your resource book and the questions and things like that. They're all a part of it, and they're really good tools. And so that's always been our foundation. Mm-hmm. And then we also would talk about what do you have that is in our district, kind of the north side way, so mm-hmm. to speak. What are the teaching frameworks that we require our teachers to use for certain content areas? What are the different resources they have in people on their campus? What are some of the specialists that may be able to help them and so forth? But when it comes time kind of to the nitty gritty and they're having to actually go in and make sure that they are rating teachers the way they should be and things like that, if the state materials don't give them what they need, or maybe they still have questions or they think, gosh, how could I word things a little differently? That's when we jumped to that T-test black book, because it had so much good information in it that was above and beyond what the state had given us.
Got it. Yeah. It gives them those little catchphrases. I call them the catchphrases that exactly. Once you have that evidence, you just need some different ways to present it to lead into it, right?
For sure.
So what does that look like with the broader district goals? I mean, that alignment of the feedback process. I mean, what are some little nuggets of information that you would use when you were going through training?
Well, I think every district, when they are going through and they're talking about the kind of feedback they want their teachers to have, there might be something that's a district initiative. Maybe it's around student discourse or higher order questioning or whatever. And so you have to see if that is a district goal. Obviously, that's going to be one of your primary look fors that you'll mm-hmm. want to capture evidence around. Or maybe it's at your campus, whatever your campus improvement plan goals might be, or your strategies and so forth. But whatever that is, that's one piece of what you're looking for. But you're also having to look for all of those pieces of evidence to be able to accurately rate every single dimension that, mm-hmm. that is in there, that's in the rubric. And so if maybe your goal is around higher order questioning, but now you're rating in classroom environment, looking at management practices and how kids are behaving and so forth, that those you still have to have evidence for both of those things. And so it's not just a one and done, it's an and, right? How do mm-hmm. I find this piece of information and evidence for that, plus making sure I'm gathering evidence for what other dimensions are in the rubric. So it's a little bit of everything.
Right. Wow. Well, I know with teacher retention right now and being able to find the just right fit when the bench is much leaner than it's ever been, I guess is what I want to call it. Are there any takeaways that you use when coaching, or y'all talked with principals about coaching teachers through the feedback process, especially when at times we have ones with 0 to 3, 5 years experience and some are ultimately certified, you know, not coming in with that pedagogy. So when you talk through that process, because I do feel like leaders listening to this kind of want to hear, like, what does that look like in a larger district when you're helping to guide your principals into, with it not being a gotcha, but truly being a continuous feedback loop of being able to foster that growth? I don't know, were there any conversations about that? And even, I mean, an add-on to that is even administrators are new, right? And so you're kind of have a both and when you're talking about, you have a, you know, fairly new principal stepping into the role, and then they're hiring a fairly new or brand new teaching staff. And there's that balance of giving actionable feedback, but not so much where they're like hanging their hat, like, I'm not sure I want to do this anymore.
Absolutely. Well, and you hit the nail on the head when you talked about it. The pool of applicants is pretty shallow. And so you definitely, more than ever, that retention of teachers is so important. But what we find with our teachers, you know, teachers don't leave a campus because of the kids or the parents. They tend to leave because they don't feel connected to their principals. Mm-hmm. And so we spend a lot of time in our leadership development programs talking about, to your point, Jerry, around those relationships. Mm-hmm. What do you do to make sure that you have relationships with teachers? And some of it is just the friendly, you know, checking in, understanding what's happening in their lives and their families and things like that. But then there's also kind of that, I call it that academic relationship, really, that kind of instructional relationship you have with the teacher, to where they can understand that as the principal or as the administrator coming in, you kind of have two hats that you wear with them. Sometimes you're going in as the coach, and that's probably the majority of the time mm-hmm. what you are doing. You're going in and supporting their instruction. But then there's times where you do have that evaluator hat on, and that is your role as well, because there are times that teachers are not where they need to be, and we can't sacrifice the learning of a child or of a classroom of children mm-hmm. while we wait for a teacher to catch up. And so there has to be this fine balance between the two areas that are there. You asked a second ago about in a large district, what does that look like when you have so many new administrators? And I will say it's starting to kind of shift a little bit as numbers are getting smaller and we're not opening as many campuses as we used to. But over the 4 years that I was in leadership development, we had about 50 principals overall who were within their first 3 years of experience as wow. principals. And so there's a lot of support that goes into play there in terms of just the systems Northside has set up for their principals. They all have mentors in their first year. They all have principal coaches who work with them for 2 to 3 years. So there's a lot of support that's there. But even outside of those programs, even in our PLCs, our principal PLCs at the secondary level, and then in our principal meetings and PLCs at elementary, we practice coaching. We practice what feedback looks like. We've spent a lot of time looking at questioning stems, you know, some of which have come from TEAs, you know, T-test books. Some of them mm-hmm. have come from the Black Book. Some of them have come from other resources that, you know, are available that we talk about what would it look like to coach this teacher? And of course, with the implementation of teacher incentive allotment, we've spent a lot of time this year around calibration work, mm-hmm. watching videos, going into classrooms together with your admin team to simultaneously watch right. the same lesson, and then have those conversations about what would we say to this teacher? How could we grow this teacher? What is one area of feedback we would focus on that can give us quick results? What's more of a long-term kind of feedback conversation?